definitely in, who's not in, who do you think should be in and isn't, and who might be in that you wouldn't assume. Anything tournament related we're going to get to today, because we've got Jerry Palm back on the podcast for the first time this season, and there are a lot of interesting cases, whether we're talking top seeds, bubble teams. As expected, Jerry has made enemies of many already this season, and we are definitely going to get to all of those. It's the Friday podcast, CBSSports.com, Eye on College Basketball. If you are not subscribed in iTunes, I highly recommend you do so. The hoop season is really going to pick up here over the next 6 weeks, and the podcast will be coming to you continually, minimally three times a week. We might even do a fourth here or there. Jerry, thanks for coming back on, dude. How you doing?
I'm kind of foggy. Because I just did a bracket, and that's like an all-night thing. So if I sound even less coherent than usual, you'll know why.
Well, I appreciate you you hustling to do this Friday pod after doing a bracket all night. Actually, take listeners in. So when you do this bracket, and feel free to gab as long as you want, what is your process? How long does it take you? How do you assemble it? And how late did you go last night? When did you finally close up the laptop?
Well, actually, last night I ended up taking a nap and then waking up and starting over. So that was like about 3:30. Got about 3 hours of sleep. Stayed up, watched Gonzaga and St. Mary's, and then gave up. Turned off. Took a nap. Got up about 3:30 and just started kind of picking up where I left off. My process is pretty involved. I have. Obviously, I have these tools, you know, where I can compare teams and things like that. We actually have a variation of that on the CBSSports.com website. There's a team comparison tool in the bracketology area. I've got something that I've made for myself that's a more sophisticated version of that that I use to compare teams. But basically, I start with I got about 80 teams on my board, maybe a little more when you're counting all the conference champions, everybody that has to be seeded. And I arrange them by conference, and I rate all of the teams within each conference in terms of, I guess, essentially seeding for the NCAA tournament. And then when I get I start, you know, with, like, the best team from each conference. Well, I take care of the bottom quarter of the bracket first, and then I start with the best team from each conference and just do comparisons. Got, like, oh, I don't know, you know, 8, 9, 10 conferences that have got at large quality teams, and just start doing comparisons and working my way down. And when I take a team from one conference, I grab the next team from that conference, if there is one, and throw it in the pile and start comparing. And that's an easier way for me to do it than, you know, the way the committee does it. Of course, it's when you have 10 people, the way the committee does it is easier for them. They just look at the teams all together, however many they have, usually about 8 or so at a time that they're looking at. And I'll look at however many I have, and I'm always just sort of ranking teams within groups, within conferences, and then the best teams from each conference and rank those and start throwing them into my bracket. And, you know, as you get deeper down the bracket, the ability to separate those teams or find ways to separate those teams is a little bit more of a challenge, and so it takes longer. The whole bracketing process probably takes, 5 or 6 hours to do by myself, and that's not counting the nap if I take one.
Right now, the mock selection, the NCAA is having, you know, 20, 25 media members doing a mock selection, meeting out in Indianapolis. We'll get to that in a second, but, I do want to draw. I went to it last year, and I found, as I expected, that, and this was only in an extremely accelerated process because the committee, it's extremely accelerated. It's fun, and it does take you through it, but it's not exactly what the committee does. But I did find, as I thought I would, it actually becomes challenging once you are so burrowed in numbers and team profiles and comparing and going over this. As you do this throughout the season, you know, college football season ends, you start to look toward the college hoop season, you look toward bracketing, you look toward seeding. Do you even sometimes, smack yourself either figuratively or literally and say, okay, you know what, let me just step back here. Let me take some time and remove myself as best I can from this, because even sometimes the numbers of the profile, you know, it just it's one after another. It's a mosaic, and sometimes they bleed together. Do you find that process sometimes happens with you?
Absolutely. That's why it's a 6-hour process instead of a 5-hour process.
Okay.
In fact, actually, the nap helps.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, you know, what happens is it gets to like 1 o'clock in the morning, and then, you know, I have to decide, like, what, am I going to function better after a 3 hour nap, or am I going to function better running on fumes and caffeine? And, you know, if I don't have a deadline pressing, then I'm going to opt for the nap. But it's a, you know, when you get to March, there's no naps because the deadline is always pressing. But this time of year, I can still afford one. But yeah, I'll get to like the, you know, I'll get to a point where it's like, all right, I need a coffee break or you know, something, and I walk away from it for 10 minutes and then come back.
All right, good deal. Let's discuss these the mock meetings, because I've been to one. How many have you gone to? Have you just
three.
Been to, you've been to three of them. Do you find I mean, what are your impressions of them? Do you find that they're extremely helpful? You know, how might they be improved? I just wanted your opinion on it, since it's timely, given that as we record this, there are plenty of media members, our brethren, tweeting their brains out about what they are doing and learning, supposedly.
It's, as you might imagine, a little bit different for me when I'm there, because I'm so versed in their process already. I mean, I've studied their process from outside, and then I go and I actually get to see it from the inside. So what I pick up from it are little things like, what do the team sheets look like? How are they viewing the information? Back when I had my own site, you know, I changed the way I put together the breakdown pages based on my first trip to the mock meetings and seeing what the actual team sheets look like, because I thought it would be helpful to see the data the way the committee is actually seeing the data, or as close as I can make it look, and actually kind of clean it up, because the way the committee looks at it, those team sheets are kind of ugly. But
agreed.
So I kind of clean it up, but put the data on the page the way the committee is seeing the data. And that way you can make comparisons the way the committee is making comparisons. So to me, that was really helpful, especially the first time I went. And then, you know, the thing that I've learned is bracketing. It's like, I haven't been since they went to 68, and I really wanted to go and see how they dealt with the first four. And things like, you know, when they had the one play-in game for the when they had 65 teams, they made it a point never to put both the SWAC and MEAC in that game. And that was basically – that's the only non-analytical seeding thing, basically the only political seeding thing, was they wanted to make sure they didn't have the MAC and the MEAC and the SWAC in that game.
Aside from, like, now, BYU on a Sunday too, like, obviously.
Well, BYU on a Sunday is a religious
– Right, yeah. I just
like
mean,
a requirement where
right,
not right. having the MEAC and the SWAC, they didn't want the both HBCU conferences in that game because they didn't want to bring up some sort of discrimination issue. So they made sure – And I think most of the time it wasn't an issue anyway, because one of them would not belong in that game. But now the SWAC is basically the worst league every single year.
Yeah.
So they're going to be in the bottom. Now I want to know that they're putting four teams from the bottom into those games. Are they still going to do that? Mm-hmm. I want to know – I would really like to know how BYU and Iona ended up 14 seeds last year. You know, what sort of bracketing principle went into making that happen? And they're probably learning this on the fly as well. But now that they've got these play-in games, I kind of want to see the bracketing process for these, for all of these play-in games, and the selection process for those last four at-large teams. How are they, you know, the mechanics of doing that? And the bracketing mechanics, that was very educational, because what I came out of that with is geography plays a much bigger factor than people think.
Exactly.
They will move teams up and down the bracket just to get them closer to home, for no other reason than just to get them closer to home. And they say that's because that's what the feedback they get is, that that's what coaches and administrators want, is they want to play closer to home, closer to their fans, even if that means you're one seed lower than you ought to be in the bracket.
I was genuinely a little surprised by how much geography factors in, and I tried to make a point of mentioning it on the podcast a few times last year, so we got to March, and I'm going to do it again this year. Fans have to realize that you mentioned it correctly, and the top five seeds have preference, and coaches everywhere, they would rather travel 2 hours and sacrifice a seed than travel 6 hours and get a better seed. And so that plays into it, and especially whether we're talking the greater field or the teams that are playing on Tuesday and Wednesday in Dayton, because it can shake out into weird ways. Because yes, so you look at BYU last year, and that's not a 14. It's just you know, it didn't.
But that's not fair to the three.
It isn't. Know. Oh, I know exactly. And so now we have the yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but BYU and Iona, they clearly had to have been moved to that spot. Now, they released an S-curve last year that didn't show any movement of seeds, which I know that's not true. Mm-hmm. They move seeds all the time. It's almost impossible to do a bracket without swapping seeds somewhere. And actually, I got in trouble with Memphis fans last week. I don't know if you ever see what's on my Twitter feed. You probably don't. But Memphis fans were beating me up because they beat Southern Miss on the weekend. And from the Friday back bracket to the Monday bracket, I actually dropped them one spot. I dropped them from a 10 to an 11. And I did that because I needed to move Boise State off the 11 line to get them away from other Mountain West teams. And Memphis was the team I moved down. And Memphis fans were just beating me up because they finally beat somebody halfway decent. And they ended up dropping a seed. But that's the bracketing principles. You know, sometimes you have to do that sort of thing. The difference is that the committee doesn't do brackets twice a week. They do one. So you don't – there's no up and down movement like there is for people like me.
Yeah, and oh, trust me, I do. I mean, I follow my personal account and the Eye on College Basketball, and through the Eye on College Basketball thing, I see. Jerry, it just cracks me up. Who is the fan base? Is it Virginia more than anyone this year that's given you grief, or is there?
Sometimes it varies week to week. Virginia's the maddest at me right now. They were. I think I wrote it in a blog post, coming at me with pitchforks and torches, because they've got six bad losses already this season, and they think they should be in the tournament because those games basically shouldn't count. I mean, that's what they think, is that those games shouldn't count. So,
Let's get into Virginia. They're an interesting profile. They're one of the most interesting profiles that I can remember in the past 5 or 6 years. Because right now, you mentioned their terrible losses. Mason, Delaware, Old Dominion is maybe the most shocking loss.
It would be if Virginia makes the tournament as an at-large. That Old Dominion loss will be one of the worst losses ever for an at-large team.
Right. And so they're 18-6 overall, 8-3 in the ACC. They're a top 20 KenPom team, but they do have a lot of bad losses.
You know what? That's something that comes up a lot.
Right.
KenPom numbers, Sagarin numbers, mostly KenPom numbers, irrelevant to the process.
I know. And it shouldn't be, but and it's not.
You know what? Actually, it should be, and you know why? I mean, right. I understand that that's a decent metric. I guess I shouldn't say. I mean, I'm taking people's word for it because honestly, I never look at his. I have never looked at his numbers because I don't want them to
influence.
Yeah, because they don't inform my process.
Right.
And I don't want them to. I don't want to risk them informing my process in a way that is harmful. So nothing against those numbers. I'm sure they're great because everybody says they are, and a lot of smart people think they are. But I never look. But when people come at me with stuff like that, I said, you know what, I don't care. It's nice that they're a top 20 team in KenPom. Means absolutely nothing to me because that's not going to get them in the tournament.
Right, and I think – like, so listeners have an idea. The committee does not discourage its members from using Sagarin, KenPom, BPI. And so they can use it.
I don't know what BPI is. What is that?
It's ESPN's basketball.
Oh, well, let's use some ESPN creation. That's a good idea.
I'm just saying these are new metrics that are out there. And the committee doesn't discourage from using them, but they are not.
They're not sanctioned.
They're not sanctioned in the way the RPI is, and we're not going to get into this because
let me just say this in defense of the RPI, how it's used. If the RPI was like the BCS and doing the thinking for the committee, it'd be ridiculous. You could not possibly want anything like that. The reason the committee can't use something like KenPom and Sagarin and things like that is that they don't know what goes into it. They're secret formulas for, I don't know, I think KenPom's a secret, isn't it? I mean, how do they explain they're a top 20 team in KenPom? It's like, all right, well, what's KenPom? Oh, we don't know. Well, you can't make judgments based on we don't know. So you have to make judgments based on things you can explain, and they can at least explain the RPI and how they use it. And since they're not using it to do their thinking, it's okay. If they were using it like the BCS, then obviously it would be a disaster and they'd have to come up with something else.
Right. I will say this. Since the committee does not discourage using other metrics, I do think that – in conversation, because it happened last year, talking with Warlock, these conversations happened. I do think it will get brought up when Virginia's case is made that, hey, listen, this team is rated in other metrics high. I do think that will be part of the conversation, but RPI still is the overarching metric that is used, obviously, for transparent reasons, as you said.
Because they have to explain themselves
right.
At some point. If they take Virginia and they've got nothing – you know, then
right.
Then it's like, well, they're top 25 KenPom or top 30 KenPom or whatever they are by then. Nobody's going to care. They're going to say, well, what's, you know, I mean, even people who like KenPom can't explain it to them. You know, they don't know what that means that they're top 30 KenPom. You know, I mean, Sagarin's got some goofy things. If Virginia's a top 20 team in KenPom, I question those numbers.
Yeah, and that's – hey, listen, and he would as well because Wisconsin is the one – like Wisconsin, no matter what it does, it can't not be a top 20 KenPom team because of the way that it plays, and he's admitted that it's a flaw in his system.
That's just how it goes. I mean, that's
right.
If you have a computer-based system, it's going to have some irregularities in it, no matter what it is. Not irregularities, but things that are counterintuitive.
Anomalies, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's the word I was looking for.
No problem. Okay, so I'm going to ask you to predict. Do you think Virginia will get into the tournament? As of today, you don't think they're going to get in?
No, because I don't think they're going to. I think they're about to lose 3 out of 4.
Okay. They're a 79 RPI right now. I think you're going to know the answer to this. Highest RPI team to knock it in is obviously Missouri State with a 21, a 19, something like that?
Yeah. They had a 21, poor Barry Hinson.
Yeah.
I think he's on that list twice in terms of the trivia of not getting in. He 21, they didn't get in. That was 2006. In fact, number 30, Hofstra didn't get in that year.
Yes.
Because 30 and didn't get in 1 year, too.
Right. And then everyone made a stink about Hofstra, and then it ended up being fellow CAA member George Mason that made a run to the Final Four, and people kind of thought Mason, it's funny how those things work out. But my question is, okay, so Virginia's a 79. Lowest, is it what, 72? I can't quite remember. And is it New Mexico?
Well, since they changed the formula to this version of the formula, it's actually USC was 67.
Okay.
In 2011, and Marquette was 64. Back in the old version of the formula, before they put the home and road weightings in, New Mexico got in at 74.
74 with New Mexico. Okay, so right now Virginia's
at
79.
That was 1999.
There we go. It is interesting to see how high and how low the committee will go. Obviously, the rules are a little bit different now, so history can be a little bit of a guide, but not the all-determining.
That USC team broke a lot of records. I mean, it's the lowest rated since 2005 when they changed the formula. It's the only team to ever get in with 6 bad losses. Well, I consider a bad loss 100 triple-digit RPI. Team, you lose to them, that's a bad loss.
Okay.
And they're the only team to get in with 3 losses to 200 plus RPI teams. And then they went in the tournament and basically embarrassed themselves. And selections aren't based on what you do in the tournament, but they were bad enough that I suspect their committee's not going to make that mistake again.
All right. Let's look at your bracket right now. As of right now, you've got Indiana, Miami, Michigan State, and Duke as your 1 seeds. How solid are those going forward?
They're not. Nobody's solid. I mean, that's the thing.
I'm setting you up, buddy. I'm just setting you up. That's all.
I know. I know. But it's that's the thing about this year is that nobody is really solid. You know, if I had a vote in a poll, I'd probably vote Miami number 1 because I think they played best recently, and that's kind of what polls are about. It's kind of what have you done for me lately. Indiana, I guess, has the best profile. They've been the most consistent team all year long. Michigan State and Miami are the two teams that are actually playing like they want to be number 1 seeds. But, you know, the Duke, it hasn't been the same without Ryan Kelly. You know, Florida hasn't done anything away from home. Everybody's in love with Florida. I want to see them beat somebody better than Middle Tennessee State outside of Gainesville before I get on that bandwagon. And then they lost in Arkansas last week, which just sort of reinforced that idea. You know, Michigan went through just a brutal stretch of a schedule.
Yeah.
You know, they played three games on the road out of 4 at Indiana, home Ohio State, at Wisconsin, at Michigan State. There aren't maybe 5 teams outside the Big Ten that are going to play a 4-game stretch like that this year. And there might not be 10 teams outside the Big Ten that are going to play 4 games total like that this year. Gonzaga is having a great year, but they're in the West Coast Conference, may not get enough respect to be a 1. Even though I think that they should be in that discussion. Arizona, every time you think they look good, they do something stupid. Butler's playing hurt right now. Syracuse has got Sutherland. It's going to be interesting to see how that helps, although they just lost at UConn. There's Louisville. Let's throw them in there too. I mean, there's a lot of teams that could still end up number 1 seeds. I can't specifically tell you any team right now that's going to be a number 1 seed, although I do think that whichever team ends up the Big Ten champion will be a number 1 seed. But that's one of 3 teams. I don't know which one it's going to be.
Agreed with that. in all your years of tracking this, has the 1-3 line been as interchangeable as this as you can ever remember?
Never. Never. Usually by a month before now, the middle of January, we know we can identify at least one, if not two teams that we know are going to be number one seeds, barring some sort of injury. That hasn't happened all year. We still don't know who's going to be a one.
I personally love it.
I don't mind it, other than it makes bracketing a little bit harder, because the top of the bracket is usually a place where it's kind of easy. This year it's not as easy as it usually is, but so it makes it probably half an hour longer, 15 minutes longer than it would otherwise need to be. But it is really interesting that the top of the bracket is so fluid, and I think it makes for a wide open tournament when we get there, because whoever the number one seeds are, they're going to be vulnerable. If not to a 16, which a lot of people talk about, but to an 8-9 winner. I mean, an 8-9 winner could beat a 1 this year, and it wouldn't be a surprise at all. Heck, in some cases, it might not even be much of an upset.
I want to go through a bunch of teams here and basically just give listeners a good idea of clubs they just might not be totally aware of why they are here or why they are out. So I'm going to go with teams that are in your bracket right now.
Okay.
And I'm just looking at it. I see Charlotte as an 11. Is that presuming they win the A10, or are they?
No, I don't presume anything with these.
Okay.
Teams.
So
because
that
it's hard enough to do a bracket with current information.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, trying to look ahead, I actually did that one year, about 4 years ago on the CBS site when I was still running my own. I had current brackets on my own site and look-ahead brackets on CBS, and it was a disaster because everybody compared the look-ahead brackets to all of the others, which were not, and so it was a real mess. No, I mean, Charlotte's in basically because, you know, the win at Butler is what put them in. I mean, now that's a high-quality win on the road, which, let's face it, most teams in this bracket don't have a win that good. And they don't really have any bad losses. The loss of George Washington is bad, but you know it's a blah profile. They're 5-5 against the top 100, but they have shown the ability to play tournament quality opposition away from home, and that is something that's probably the number one thing the committee looks for. Can you play tournament quality opposition away from home? And that can be a tiebreaker in a sense. You know, if you've got them compared to say an Iowa State, who's got one top 200 win away from home, and that was Drake in Des Moines. Charlotte's going to get that nod, everything else being equal.
Yeah, if listeners want to check on the blog earlier this week, I had a post on teams that have done the best. Now, this was as of Tuesday, done the best away from home, and Miami.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. That was interesting.
Yeah, and then now I just didn't have time.
You were doing true – I think you did true road games though, right?
I did true road games, and I was not able to separate between top quality ones because that would have just taken me all day. So I could not.
The committee wants to see you do it away from home. So neutral site wins are just as good. I mean, let's face it, the tournament is mostly neutral site anyway.
Right.
So if you can beat quality teams at neutral sites, that's just as good as winning on the road.
Yes. So that leads me to the fact that VCU has a tremendous away from home record, yet you've only got them as an 8. I would have guessed closer to a 6 or a 7. Why an 8 right now?
Because their best win is Memphis.
Okay.
And that's just not – despite the fact they're in the polls, that's just not a good enough win. And most of their damage on the road is against non-tournament teams. That the 8 teams in the top 100 they've beaten at Charlotte and versus Memphis, neutral site, everything else at home. So that's why they're in the tournament because they don't really have it. They don't have any bad losses at all. It's a good record. It's a decent profile. But they don't have the high-quality win. And it's been mostly at home, and that's why their seed is knocked down a little bit.
And I'll go right to Memphis because right now, 21-3 team, you've got them as an 8, top 30 in the RPI. Losses are all to tournament teams, VCU, right. Minnesota, Louisville. But, of course, the CUSA problem crops up again. They're undefeated in the league. Their best wins, I mean.
Southern Miss.
And Ohio, who I know is not even a great win, but just if we can pick two. At Tennessee, right. Right, at Tennessee on the road. You've got them as an 8. What is their – let's say Memphis really goes total John Calipari era on us and runs the table, enters the NCAA as a 3 seed, and – as a 3-loss team, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Enters the tournament as a 3-loss team. What is – I mean, 3-loss Memphis, undefeated in league. Can they get a 4? I would think they'd get a 4.
That would be a record for a team without a win over another team in the field.
That is a great point.
They don't have a they could go 30-3 or whatever that number is in three.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's 31, and not have beaten another team in the field.
That is amazing.
Except for maybe Harvard, because they do have a home win over Harvard.
Yeah.
If you go back and look, it's hard to get in the top half of the bracket without a win over another team in the field. Maybe they would, but their realistic ceiling. I mean, look at Utah State. Look at the gaudy numbers they put up here.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Memphis's profile is a little better than that, but Utah State was a traditional double-digit seed. So, yeah. I mean, they were like an 11 or 12 every year with gaudy records built on nothing. Memphis has got a gaudy record built on nothing, a little less nothing than Utah State traditionally had. But this is not a four-seed type of profile. It's more like, at best, probably an eight. Because they're going to be competing with teams that have shown they can beat tournament-quality opposition probably multiple times.
Interesting. Okay. I love it. Butler, you've got as a three, and right away we see. Now, listen, they schedule non-conference tremendously. Brad Stevens has been able to build
big
up.
Big wins, too.
Big wins, but you know what? You can't tell me if this was a Horizon team, they'd be anywhere near a three right now, right?
I mean, if this was a Horizon team, they wouldn't have this many games against top 100 teams.
Exactly. So the A-10 immediately is paying dividends.
If they were a Horizon team, they would probably not be 19-5. They'd probably be something like 22-2, and maybe still a three seed if they've beaten Gonzaga and Indiana. They wouldn't have the strength of schedule. You know, they lost at home to Charlotte. They've been dealing with injury problems, which is something the committee does consider when it comes to seeding. They lost to Charlotte. Andrew Smith didn't play. There was one loss of LaSalle game. I think Ronte Clark was still out. So, you know, at full strength, this has been a pretty solid team with a win over the overall number one and a win over a two seed in the current bracket. It's hard to knock them down much farther than a three. If the tournament started today, Andrew Smith is still out, although he's only expected to miss one game.
Right.
That may not hurt them in terms of seeding. I actually think this team might get seeded just slightly better than its profile because of the injury factor that they've dealt with this year.
Give me your team that is, you think, better or stronger than the general public thinks and weaker than the general public thinks, one on each end.
Weaker than the general public thinks. I guess let's go with Kentucky. I can't because he just got hurt.
That's true. So
they're probably the general public now thinks they're really what they are.
Yeah.
I think Missouri is stronger than people think.
Okay.
Because they really went through a rough stretch without Lawrence Bowers. This was a top 25 team before that. And I think they're probably a top 25 team after that. They just haven't had a chance really to show it yet. But I think by the end of the year, Missouri's going to be a team that is stronger than people think. Weaker than people think. How about Memphis? I mean, we just talked about them.
Yeah.
They're the top 25. I can't justify a top 25 vote for Memphis right now.
Yeah, and that's just pull habit. Once teams rack together, you know, tremendous winning streaks, it's just going to naturally happen. All right, so here's your first four. Temple, Kentucky. And I have not done a bracket, but if I did, I figured I would have Temple out. After losing at home to Duquesne, I mean, that's just
they were
brutal.
Like a 10 in my bracket, but you got to understand, everybody at the bottom of the bracket is losing. Just
right. Oh, yeah, totally. I get you. And so Temple, Kentucky, St. Mary's, Iowa State is your first four. Who are the first four out as of today for you, Jerry?
The first four out I have Massachusetts, Wyoming, St. John's, and Indiana State.
In that order?
Yes.
Interesting. Now, why UMass over Indiana State?
Well, I mean, Indiana State's another one of those teams where, I mean, they're a bit schizophrenic. You know, they've got some really good wins. You know, Miami is especially good, even though Miami was shorthanded in that game. Still a great win. Mississippi, a win that looks worse every day. Creighton, Wichita, Creighton's wins looking worse every day. But they've got those five bad losses. I mean, this is a team that just can't get out of its own way. They seem to be playing to the level of their competition, whatever that level is. They almost lost to Southern Illinois at home the other day, too. I mean, it could have been six. That would have really been a disaster. This is a team, you know, you get to five bad losses. Now you're almost in historic territory in terms of getting an at-large bid, regardless of the quality of your wins. But because of the quality of their wins, I think you still have to talk about them.
And just to remind listeners that big wins, I mean, judging off of what I heard in the room last year, I mean, big wins do mean a lot. They mean more than a damaging loss.
In general, I would say that's true, yeah.
Because you've proven that you have the ability to beat tournament-worthy teams. Now, trust me, bad losses can hurt. We've discussed plenty about how teams are hindered by this. So Indiana State, to me, is very intriguing. If they had not lost at Missouri State, do you think they'd be in your field right now? They just lost on Tuesday at Missouri
State. Yeah, they would. The Missouri State dropped them out of my bracket. They were in the first four before they felt they lost that game.
Okay, interesting.
They, by the way, I would pick them to win the Missouri Valley Tournament, assuming they can win their first game. If they can get by that first game, they're probably okay.
How about that? And a three, and so you think we're looking, if that happens, a three-bid Valley? I mean, Creighton is sliding.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what Creighton and Wichita do. I mean, if they only lose to Indiana State, then yeah, I think they can hang in. But, you know, that they're not doing that either. I mean, Wichita had a slump. Now they've kind of come out of it. Now Creighton is slumping. You know, when you slump in a league like the Missouri Valley, every loss is really damaging. You know, it's not like slumping in the Big Ten like Michigan did. So, you know, they've really got to take care of business. There's a lot of pressure on those guys, and it's unfortunate, but you've got to take care of business if you want to be an NCAA tournament team.
What is your opinion/outlook? Because I do like getting your just general opinion on these teams as well, Jerry. St. Mary's has an every other year thing going, okay? They make it, then they don't. They make it, then they don't. 21-5, they do have a very intriguing game against Creighton coming up on February 23rd. They get swept in the regular season by Gonzaga. I feel they really needed that. You obviously still have them in the first four right now. Yeah. But is it a situation like they're in right now, but it's a situation where they really can't afford to lose until the WCC tournament?
Yeah, they can't afford it. Basically, they can afford to lose to Gonzaga, but I think they got to beat Creighton. If they don't beat Creighton or Gonzaga, they beat Gonzaga, it's probably the tournament final.
Yeah.
If they don't beat Creighton, I think it's going to be hard to make a case for them for an at-large because, again, who have they beaten that's in the field? It's like Memphis, except Memphis didn't lose to Pacific and Georgia Tech to start the year. So, I mean, I think I've watched St. Mary's. I think they look like a tournament team. But as I always say, I'm not a big fan of the eye test. I think, first of all, it's overrated in the minds of people because I don't think the committee uses it that much. If you look like a tournament team, there should be some evidence on paper that you're a tournament team. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't beaten a team in the field and you've got a couple of bad losses, you're probably not going to get in. So that Creighton game looms really large for St. Mary's.
The thing, and if you disagree, by all means, pipe up. The thing I think the eye test plays into is last year, Shaheen and David Warlock and the people on the committee said, eye test plays its most prominent role when we get into debating either final bids or seed lines because it's almost gut instinct when you see these teams play. If we're looking at a four or five, who are we going here?
Right.
You know, that's where it plays. You'd agree?
Yeah, I would agree, especially at the bottom of the bracket. When you're dealing with teams that have basically accomplished nothing, and especially in the 68-team era, the last half dozen teams, there's very little accomplishment. So you're almost left with, well, do they look like a tournament team or not? And so I can see that at the bottom of the bracket. But if all you have is the eye test, you don't have anything. Mm-hmm. And right now, all St. Mary's really has is the eye test.
Okay, another confusing team here. Right now, in the 60s in RPI, 15-8 overall, even less than that because they have non-D1 wins. Air Force, 6-4 in the Mountain West. I've seen some talk that this team, if it wins, you know, if it gets a home win against Colorado State Saturday, it should be in the field.
No.
No, I mean, right? I'm not quite seeing this here because the non-conference is flat out awful.
Yeah, it is. It's not the worst that the committee's going to see because actually Virginia's is probably the worst the committee's going to see, another black mark against them. But Air Force, again, home court hero. I mean, at home Colorado State, home UNLV, I mean, they're great. They have a great home court advantage because of the altitude, I think. Mm-hmm. But they're only 6-8 against the top 200 teams in the RPI. 6-8, that record isn't going to stand. They're going to have to get above 500 against that group of teams, and that means more than just beating Colorado State.
Right now you've got
that, by the way, another indicator. I don't know that the committee ever throws that number out there, but historically speaking, if you're below 500 against the top 200 teams in the RPI, one or two teams total in 20 years have made the field.
Do you know off the top of your head who those are or no?
Yeah, I think it was the same year, Oregon and Arizona. One, we're both. This is probably 4 or 5 years ago. I can look it up, but I want to say it was like Oregon and Arizona the same year, not that long ago, but in the 65 team era.
I love those stats. I love those stats and facts. I want to get them all in like one spot, just like the anomalies.
They're on a spreadsheet in my.
If you're willing to share them, that would be an amazing thing to post at some point, because I love those kind of historical precedents that come up and the things that have yet to be the thresholds that have yet to be crossed as well. You've got the Mountain West with 5 bids right now. I would think just from a projection standpoint, I think that's probably what it's gonna end up being. But one more MWC question: which team in the Mountain West right now is actually? You know what? I lied. 2 questions: which team is the most which team is the most vulnerable and is my favorite team, Colorado State. I mean, if they really ran the table, do they have a legit chance at, say, a number 3 seed, in your opinion?
Run the table, yes. Colorado State. Answer the second question first. Yeah, Colorado State, if they run the table, they prove they can do it away from home. And then that certainly would, run the table. They certainly would have done that. And, yeah, they're right up there. I think the Mountain West champion, I have New Mexico's a 3 right now. Mm-hmm. So if Colorado State ends up the regular season tournament champion, a 3 would not be out of the question.
Interesting. And Boise.
The most vulnerable. Boise,
yeah, Boise State,
among the teams in my current bracket, Boise State.
How shaky?
Reasonably shaky. I mean, they're down as a double-digit seed, so they can't afford a slump.
Okay. Let's go to the flip here. We talked about the 1-3 and how movable those pieces are. On the other end, obviously the bubble every year is big and whatever. Like, it's the same damn conversation every year. And it's fun. It's fun. But does it mirror what we're seeing at the top in terms of seeds, 11, 12, 13, where there's a lot of interchanging parts, or is it a little sturdier, less volatile than what we're seeing, at the 1, 2, and 3 lines?
Oh, no, the bottom of the bracket is always more volatile because there's less separation usually between those teams than there is at the top of the bracket. The top of the bracket teams kind of separate themselves, if not individually, in groups. But then the closer you get to the middle of the bracket, the less there is separating those teams. So that the middle to the bottom of the bracket is always much more volatile in terms of not just in and out, but seeds up and down, week to week.
Interesting. You've got Zona as a 2, by the way, and I did want to touch on them really quick because
they're a funny team.
Well, and we also get into the geographical aspect of this, and they're not going to. I wouldn't think they're going to slip into a position where they're not going to get preference or whatever. But the challenge for the bracket and the committee is the fact that on average, and this year we've got better teams out west, but on average, the most of the good teams aren't out west where they've got pods and sites, and
right.
it's an interesting dilemma, right?
It is, and you're right. This year's a little better because you've got Arizona, Gonzaga, a Mountain West champion, maybe a runner-up that you can put out west, and they might all be top 16 teams. But you're right. I mean, some years it's all of the San Jose's, the San Diego's, the Salt Lakes, the Portland's, whatever sites are filled with teams from the east because there's nobody in the top 16 or maybe one team in the top 16 at the Western team. And this year it will be a little bit easier, but if you've got, say, I've got Arizona and Gonzaga, I can't put them both in the West region. I can't put them both in L.A. because they're both 2s, but I can at least put them both in Western pods.
Okay.
And by the way, New Mexico is actually closer to Austin, Texas than they are to either of the Western pods.
You've got to be kidding me.
No, I mean,
that's awesome.
By about 100 miles or so.
I love these stats, dude. Love them.
And the committee, by the way, uses driving distance.
Yes, yes, which is, ironic considering, a lot of times teams fly, but whatever. Hey, UConn can't play, but if they could, where would you think they'd be seated right now?
Oh, good question. Probably in the middle of the bracket. I mean, I haven't really looked at them critically because I don't have to. And in fact, I don't even have really good, breakdown information on them because I don't need it.
Right.
But I would guess that that's a team that beat Michigan State, so, they've done something this year. They are, let's see, I'm just bringing it up, 3-5 against the top 50, wins over Michigan State and Syracuse. That's pretty good. Only bad loss, not even a bad loss, would be the loss at St. John's at their worst.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know, maybe a 7, give or take.
Yeah,
that's a borderline right. Top 25 team.
Yeah, totally. NC State's a top 20 RPI team. Totally vexing. I don't trust them whatsoever.
Yeah.
And right now you've got them, I think, what is an 8? You've got them in an 8-9 playing Ole Miss. That would actually be a really intriguing game if it ended up coming to be. But why NC State that low when RPI numbers that high? And how does the resume then overtake what the computers show on a general, you know, overview of the Wolfpack?
Well, they aren't very good away from home, especially on the road. They did beat UConn on a neutral court, which is nice. They're not above 500 against the top 100 teams. They're 5-6. You know, they're kind of an inconsistent team. They beat Duke at home, then they lose the next game. They beat Carolina at home, they lose the next game. They've lost, you know, to Maryland and Virginia. Neither of those teams may make the tournament. So that's a lot of non-tournament losses for a team that, you know, people think should be in the top 25. Frankly, to me, they've underachieved. They're not playing to the level of their talent. I realize Lorenzo Brown missed a game or two, but this is a team that just hasn't shown the consistency of a team that belongs higher in the bracket.
Okay. Just so everyone, we had talked about the first three seeds right now. Jerry's got Pittsburgh as a four, Georgetown as a four, Kansas State as a four, and Kansas as a four. We'll be interesting to see what the Jayhawks do, because, I mean, did you ever have them as a one?
Early on,
because they were looking really good, and now they've taken a tumble. We'll see if they recollect themselves and are able to fight back in, and we'll see if that top three seed line drops into the fourth the fourth level there, and if we've got some interchangeability. I don't think any one seed – I mean, no one seed right now. They'd have to completely bottom out to even drop to a four. We're not going to see that much change, right?
Kansas?
I'm just talking like Kansas was once a one and now it's a four. But Indiana, Miami, Duke, and Michigan State, I mean, they would have to just
they may drop off the top line, but it would take, you know, like Victor Oladipo getting hurt and Indiana going in the tank. I mean, any Robbie Hummel situation for any of those teams to fall that far, you would think.
There you go. All right, good steal. By the way, we've got this great new tool. Dude, I am loving this thing. Was this your idea, the Jerry Palm Reader? Do you want to take all the credit?
No, it was Tim Stevens' idea.
Okay.
He kind of approached it from, you know, like fans want to know who to root against and then thought maybe take it into what to look for. But, you know, it's kind of a cool thing, a day-to-day look at, you know, which teams you need to root for on that particular day to help your RPI get better. And it's a long-term look. You know, your RPI may, you know, your day-to-day fluctuation in RPI – may or may not reflect that because of, you know, the rankings of teams around you, what teams do around you. But this is just in terms of helping your own raw number get better, the teams that you want to root for.
It is so cool. If you go to CBSSports.com and you just check bracketology or just search Jerry Palm Reader, also, you know, brilliantly named, you can type in any team. So right now I'm going to do this live right here. So I'm going to say Wichita State. You type in Wichita State. It brings up the page. Or it will bring up the page.
Yeah, today's a tough day to check because there's not very many games on a Friday.
That's true. Okay, so right now Duke, it just says Duke is funny. To boost Duke's RPI, Cornell needs to beat Yale. But on like Saturday, you type in a team, it'll bring up all sorts of cool stuff.
And yeah, because about everybody plays on Saturday.
Yeah, so yeah, between that and the college basketball RPI team comparison, which gives you home, away records, neutral records, strength of schedule, where it ranks, the RPI, where it ranks, it gives you a good idea of when you look side by side and you look at two team resumes. It's a couple of really really good things. Anything else, dude, that you want to address in terms of certain teams? You getting blowback on Twitter from any fan base that you need to further explain yourself, or have we covered so much of
it? No, I think we've covered all the people that hate me at the moment.
Okay. There's still so many more left.
I mean, hey, we got a month to go. There's going to be more that hate me.
Oh my gosh, it's going to be so good. We'll get you back on here in the next couple of weeks as we whittle this down. You can follow the man on Twitter. Send him love letters too, and advice. In addition to the,
I saved some of my favorites. Oh, they're not really love letters. You know, it's funny. RPI guys, bracketologists, we don't really have groupies.
Ah, surprising actually in this 2013 era. I gotta admit, I thought that might have been the case by now, but I don't know. At JP Palm, CBS, JPPALM, CBS. I'm down with JPP. Jerry, thanks so much for coming on, dude. We'll talk soon, and stay warm and happy out there in the Midwest.
All right, thanks.
All right, Monday's podcast, we'll have Jeff Borzello, who is at the mock meetings right now. He'll be back. We'll talk about his experiences and go a little bit more into tournament selection and bubble stuff. So we'll talk to you then.